Namaste. Welcome. Take a deep breath in and exhale out. Today we move into month 5 of the Yoga of Entrepreneurship Satsang of Embracing Your Dharma. I am talking to you live today from my guru's ashram, where I am deepening and furthering my knowledge and experience with yoga. So I hope, I'm confident that will come through today. I am also outside, so I hope that the sound and the recording holds. It is a little bit breezy here. It is a beautiful 75 degrees. I am laughing it up since it is January and cooler than that in Atlanta. So welcome. Namaste. Let's start with a meditation today. So getting yourself into a grounded, comfortable seat, sitting on the floor if you're in a place where you're able to do that, just taking a deep breath in. Exhale that breath out fully. Now take another breath in and imagine that you could fill the space with the breath. Fill that space between the navel and the tailbone. So you're filling up the bottom two chakras with breath. And then you're exhaling out, contracting the belly button, squeezing all of the air out of the bottom chakras as the breath rises up the spine and out the top of the head. Drawing the in-breath now down from the top of the head. Again, filling up the space from the tailbone to the belly button. Really expanding that space with breath. And exhaling, pressing the breath out, clearing out the space in the lower chakras and letting the breath rise up the spine and out the top of the head. And one last time, inhaling, filling the space between the tailbone and the belly button, letting the breath swirl there for a moment, holding it, and now exhaling, pressing all of the breath out, and allowing the breath to rise up the spine and out the top of the head. Now bring your awareness to your third chakra, below the solar, below the rib cage and the solar plexus. And imagine there the chakra spinning clockwise to the right. And imagine that as it spins that it's glowing a bright yellow orange. So we're going to take a breath in, and on the exhale, we'll repeat the sound RAM. That's it with an R. So just imagining the chakra spinning, glowing yellow-orange. Take your breath in. RAM. Now on the inhale, drawing all of the energy and the breath from the third chakra, drawing it up the spine through the heart to the throat. And imagining the chakra in the throat spinning again clockwise. And it is shining blue. Whatever color blue resounds with you the most. And imagine as it's spinning, we're going to again take a breath in and we'll repeat the sound of the chakra. The sound of this chakra is HAM, that's with an H. So breathing in, seeing the chakra, the energy of the chakra circle in blue, inhaling. HAM. And now breathing in the energy and the breath from the fifth chakra of the throat up, feeling it go through the third eye and to the top of the head. And feeling the crown chakra circle glowing with translucent lavender color, kind of a light purple, maybe pink for some of you, but it's got that white translucent color to it, the color of the crown chakra. And again, we'll inhale, envisioning that color and the chakra spinning, and we'll exhale the sound om. Okay, the sounds of union and of consciousness as Shiva meets Shakti at the crown. So inhaling into crown chakra. Now take a breath in at the crown horizontally from in front of you. Breathe into the crown. And exhale horizontally out of the crown. And now this time, breathe in horizontally. And exhale the breath out above the head, straight up from the crown. Draw your awareness to wherever it settles up above the head. Could be 1 inch, could be 3 yards. How far doesn't matter, as long as it feels light and natural to you. Keeping your awareness there, consciously breathe in and out of that space. Now on your next breath in, gently drawing the breath in, down into the body, down through the crown and the third eye and the throat to the heart chakra. Exhaling, letting the breath dissolve inside the heart. Inhaling into the heart. And exhaling the breath out, down through the third and the second chakras, to the root, the tip of the tailbone, allowing the rest of the breath to dissolve there. And now inhaling into the tailbone and exhaling. Opening your eyes as you're ready. So I wanted to get you into this space first today, both because I'm coming from this space of having been in a lot of meditation, having held a lot of spiritual energy, and I'm being held by this ashram and by my community here. So I didn't want to come in from a different space than you're coming in from. But also I realized that I'm going to be giving you a lot of, in some ways, heady information and perhaps new information that your mind is going to want to understand. And so I wanted to take you to a place where hopefully you'll begin to hear it and absorb it from a deeper understanding, not just with the mind. Because we're going to talk today about what Dharma is. And yoga has some interesting things to say about this. I have been, in all honesty, fascinated, obsessed even, with Dharma probably for my entire life. I didn't know it was Dharma. I didn't know the term. But I have been as I look back. And, you know, perhaps as humans, we really all are. And why is because Dharma is really the concept. It kind of defies a translation perfectly, but it is that pursuit of finding and doing that for which we are exactly suited. And there's a deep call in us to do that. And I believe, I know all of you are here because you hear that call. And you are looking and searching and working, practicing in order to live that call, aligned and attuned with your own wisdom about it. And that's what Dharma is. It turns out that let me back up a moment. Dharma, if we were to call for a definition, can be translated as purpose. It can be translated as divine or rightful purpose. It can be translated as law. So taking all of that together, what it kind of means, if you think of it as an overarching umbrella term, is that which we are built to do because it is the way the world works. Dharma is the law of how we all are intersected together, in the same way that physics is the law of the natural universe. Kind of the way to think about it. And from yoga's perspective, it turns out, as controversial as this may sound, that in this pursuit of Dharma, in this pursuit of living a full life, you cannot be anyone you want. Okay? You cannot be anyone you want. You can only be yourself. That's it. So I want to read from you a couple portions of a book by Stephen Cope. It's listed in your materials for this month. It's called The Great Work of Your Life. And he does a really wonderful job of explaining it in a way that's plain language. And he has a lot of stories. It's wonderful. If you're a reader, I recommend it. What he says is, Dharma means variously, path, teaching, or law. For our purposes, it will mean primarily vocation or sacred duty. It means most of all, and in all cases, truth. Yogis believe that our greatest responsibility in life is to this inner possibility, this Dharma. I'm going to repeat that because we feel pulled responsibilities. Yogis believe that our greatest responsibility in life is to this inner possibility, this Dharma. And they believe that every human being's duty is to utterly, fully, and completely embody her own idiosyncratic Dharma. They believe that every human being's duty, not desire, not wish, not calling. Duty, that's a very strong word, is to utterly, fully, and completely embody his own idiosyncratic Dharma. And he goes on to say, shortly thereafter, not only did yogis name this hidden inner genius, Dharma, but he created a detailed method for fulfilling it. Aha! Aren't we lucky? The light goes off. Oh my God, really? Someone's going to give me tools in order to do this? How fabulous. So what does he mean by that? They created a deep, not only did they name this genius, this law of the way, of this longing and calling that we feel, but created a detailed method for fulfilling it. The Bhagavad Gita is a yogic text, and I'm not going to expound on it because we're not in an academic setting, so don't worry. But just so you're familiar with what he's talking about, the Bhagavad Gita is the text that expounds on Dharma, that sets forth this system. And in that text, the divine essence, okay, that part of God that sets down this wisdom is named Krishna. So I want to step back and emphasize that when I talk about a name, and I know that the names of the deities, we'll call them, which also correspond with Hindu deities, I know that those are resonating with some of you. They may not resonate with others of you. And that's okay. I want to emphasize that what they are is an essence of vibration, even, of the vastness of that which we call the divine, or which we experience as the divine. And this particular aspect is called Krishna. Okay, and I also want to emphasize that all of these aspects that I talk about or that we use in the meditations, in the mantra in particular, all of these aspects of the divine, they live inside of us as well as outside of us. So these are not gods and deities that we pray to as something outside of ourselves. It's an aspect of the divine that lives outside, certainly, but inside. And that, again, is about yoga being that union where everything is interconnected. There's the same set of aspects in us as outside of us, and they're related. So this aspect that sets forth for us, really actually it's setting in motion. I would say that the Krishna aspect could be described as love in motion or love in action, spirit in action. Krishna is teaching about how do we act in the world such that it's consistent with our being. Okay, or as timely as it was last night, listening to a recording of Ma Jaya, my guru, she said, Krishna plants the seed of devotion. Okay, so the devotion is what causes the act. Krishna plants the seed of that. So that's the aspect we're working with, but taking it into the world. And so, again, I'll go back to Stephen Cope's book. Stephen Cope, if you're not familiar with who he is, I wasn't exactly until I had heard of him, but I wasn't quite sure where I had heard of him from. He's the director of the Kripalu Center for Extraordinary Living in Massachusetts. So the Kripalu may be familiar to you. And he's been studying this a very long time. He breaks down Dharma into four pillars. Okay, the four keys of this method of living a fully alive life. And here's the wonderful thing. The path of this, the path of living a fully alive life is your spiritual practice. There's not a distinction. So your Dharma is your spiritual practice as well as your path in the world. It sets forth. The two are not separate. Your Dharma is your, and that's because your Dharma is your individuated soul in action in the world. Okay, so you're acting in the world via your soul, and at the same time, your soul, through that path, is learning what it has come to learn. Okay, your soul has come to learn as well as express and contribute. So, again, I'll read from you from The Great Work of Your Life. Stephen Cope concludes and explains, it is therefore the sacred duty of every individual human soul to be utterly and completely itself, to be that jewel at that time, in that place, and to be that jewel utterly. It is in this way, merely by being itself, that one jewel holds together its particular corner of space and time. The action of each individual soul holds together the entire net of the universe, small and large at the same time. Dharma upholds and expresses the order, harmony, and essential nature of individual beings in the world, and at the same time upholds unseen and an unseen inner world. Our actions in expression of Dharma, my actions, your actions, everyone's actions, are infinitely important. Infinitely important. They connect us to the soul of the world. They create the world. Small as they may appear, they have the power to uphold the essential inner order of the world. That is very impactful. And I emphasize this so much because in my experience, so often we think that what we're called to do, that taking care of us, that our individual needs and wants, desires, are somehow so insignificant that there's something else to do first. There's something else that takes priority. There's something else that's more important. And of course you want to have discernment about where the desire to act is coming from and in what direction, and we're going to work on discerning that. You already have been in all of the awareness practices you've been doing. But I think it's important for us, especially where demands are placed upon us and expectations, and we live in culture and community where that's set out for us and may be in many cases conflicting with a step or a direction that we deeply know we need to take or feel called to take. It's important in those moments to remember that our Dharma, our path, is infinitely important. It's not insignificant in any way, shape, or form. Not just to us, but to those that we're connected to and to the world at this time and this place in its evolution. So let's get back. He articulates, explains to us, and by he I mean Stephen Cope, when he's looking at how Krishna, this aspect of the divine in the yogic tradition, has explained Dharma or explained how we figure it out and you work with it. He set forth four pillars from the Bhagavad Gita. So I will go over this with you briefly now. The first is look to your Dharma, right? Discern it, name it, give it a name, and embrace it. Look to your Dharma. The second pillar is do it full out. Don't hold back. Do it with everything you've got, all of your being, everything, all the enthusiasm you can muster. Pillar three, let go of the outcome. It is not in the outcome that is the import. It is in the doing. And four, dedicate your actions to the divine. Look to that which you understand as sacred. This entire program is about your Dharma. As I said, I've been obsessed with Dharma for my whole life. And it's focused on your work. Okay, so a lot of it will be Dharma as your vocation in alignment with your soul. It's focused on your work, It's focused on understanding what is calling to be expressed or created or acted out through you, and an understanding how is the best way to do that. So we will not just be talking about Dharma today or this month. All of the months in the program are aimed at Dharma, your Dharma. But today in this month, we're going to focus on pillar one specifically, and that is discerning Dharma, naming Dharma, embracing Dharma. How the heck do we do that? How do we let ourselves do that? How do we know what the sound and the call is? How do we start to have that come to our consciousness? Because so often this is our first hang-up. What is my purpose? Am I using my life? The question of that, or the feeling that the answer may be no, or I don't know, or I don't have a purpose, can be very painful. And often it's a hang-up. What is my purpose? And it feels like, oh, my God, I have to have a big, gigantic, important purpose. Oh, my God, I got to figure out what my purpose is here now. Whew. Okay. And so I want to offer a few ways of taking that down a notch so that it's not so imposing. You're feeling called anyway, or you would not be here. And also to say that, you know, your purpose is inside of you. Your Dharma is inside of you. Your Dharma is your essential nature. It is what you were made for. It is not outside of you. You're not finding it. It's like a fingerprint. Okay, we're going to be talking about the doshas next month, being a constitution. It's like the way you are in the world. Okay, kind of a over an umbrella framework for understanding how you actually are in the world, physically, in your body. This is similar. This is the way you are in the world at a energetic level, at a soul level. Our guest wisdom teacher this month is Lisa Berkovitz, who I adore. And she calls it your soul blueprint, and that's a great way of thinking about it. You come in with it, just like you come in with your dosha, just like you come in with your eye color. You come in with those particular and idiosyncratic qualities that are your essence, that make you you. And the reason it can be so hard to discern and to name, I propose, is because it's so essential to you that you can't even see it. Okay, you're in the jar and trying to put a label on the jar. You're trying to name the contents of the jar when you are the jar and the contents of the jar. So if you can't choose to be anyone, right, how do you discern who you, and you're the jar in the contents trying to put a label on the jar, how do you discern this? So this month I'm going to offer you three tools. It's an ongoing, lifelong process. I have a couple of comments about handling that or working with that, acceptance of that. But there's three tools I'll offer you this month in aiding you to discern, or probably more accurately for some of you, for sharpening your aim. Now, Stephen Cope says, when it comes to Dharma, it's all about aim. You miss by an inch, you miss by a mile. He's like, he gives the analogy of having fallen in love with someone and decided that it's okay to live your life as their neighbor while they're married to someone else. But that's, missing your Dharma is kind of like, that's what you choose for your life. That's how much yoga emphasizes the import of you individually seeking out and looking to follow your own path. So three tools for sharpening your aim. One is your dharma type I'm going to share with you. Just like yoga has a dosha system for starting to understand your body in the world and your physiology in the world and your psychology in the world, there is also a set of very broad blueprints, types, or orientations. And it can be very helpful. We're going to talk about that. Not to box you in, but to give you some level of perspective. I'll talk a little bit more about that. A second tool is a meditation that Lisa is going to be leading you through. Okay, Lisa is really good, really expert at in the moment of taking you from that place of wisdom to that place of knowing, action. Okay, and getting you practiced in the trust that you're able to do that for yourself. And the third thing I'm going to offer this month is what I'm calling the gift diagram. Okay, I used to call it the sweet spot diagram, which by probably no coincidence, Lisa's business is called the Sweet Spot Project. but it's called the gift diagram. So we're going to do this in three parts. Today I'm going to talk to you about dharma in general, like I have. I'm going to talk to you about dharma types, both how knowing a dharma type can, your dharma type and the different ones can be useful to you, and then a little bit about each dharma type, and give you our practices for the month. Then Lisa next week is going to talk to you in her own languaging about how she understands this experience of following your path to live a full life, and take you through a meditation with some tools that you can use the audio to listen to again and again if you'd like to reuse them. And then I'll be sending out a third portion that's concrete and uses your mind more, where you're going to get down on paper your gifts as a concrete way of starting to name your dharma. So we'll do that in the third phase. I haven't figured out exactly how I'm rolling that out to you, but I'll announce it and there'll be an email. And if we'd like to have a call, we can have that too. Okay, before I move into the dharma types, which I'm fascinated by, I want to also offer that dharma is not define it in one fell swoop and then you're done for the rest of your life kind of thing. It's not like a plug and play thing. It unfolds. It's revealed to you. You know, you come to one piece of clarity and you take a step, and then another piece of clarity is revealed to you. I have a story about this. This happened to me just this week. I feel very called to do this work that I'm doing with you. I've been obsessed with dharma, looking for my own purpose, fascinated about what makes people tick, fascinated by yoga, spiritual life. All of this has come together in this program. At the same time, over the last 2 months, I've been really digging into yantra, which is the physical geometric sacred geometry of the divine essences, as well as mantra. I got emailed by one of the swamis down here on Ma's ashram about something unrelated, some work I'm doing for them. And then the next day, I saw that they were offering a retreat on mantra, yantra, and Tantra techniques, and I said, I have to be there. That happened. And I get here, and I realize, or the director of the yoga school and another student who I met 4 years ago and just really, really connected with, they are now looking at the business of our lineage of yoga, which is Kalinatha Yoga. It is new in the context of the traditions that you hear about, like you'll hear about Ashtanga or you'll hear about Kundalini. Well, it is a tradition in that sense. And so they're calling this, where do we sit? How do we How do we roll out into the world as the business? And my heart went, woo, what? The business was calling off yoga? Okay, business, yoga, I'm on it. And I had no idea that they were doing this or that the timing was right for me to speak up and say, I'm interested in helping you with that. I'm interested in participating in this process. And I felt, oh my God, I didn't even know that was part of my dharma. So I felt like, and what a perfect example to give you about how you know in your heart one piece and you take the step and something else is revealed to you and you go, oh yeah, that's right. Okay, I'm going to act on that piece now. And I don't know what it looks like and they don't know what it looks like, but we just know that I am called to be part of this. The other thing about dharma is it also can shift, change, ripen, and mature according to stages of your life. Stages of life have dharma types too. So this is probably a good place to jump into the dharma types. So I want to emphasize again that it may feel frustrating now to hear that it's fluid. There may be a desire rising up to have a formula or to have an answer of some kind. So again, I am giving you some tools. But remember, dharma is your dance of the soul. Okay, it's your dance of the soul with the world and with the universe. You have a place, you have a role, and it's infinitely important. Because when woven together, all of our dharmas create the order of the world, the order of the universe, and the evolution of it. Okay? So it itself is a dance. Fulfilling the role is a dance. So we're going to talk again today a little bit more about understanding the idea of a role or of a purpose, starting to move toward something that might be a helpful framework or tool to add to your naming yours. And then Lisa will give you some insight and some tools about the dance aspects of living it. And we'll do that dance with your dharma for the rest of the program as we move into it, and we'll move through these other three pillars that I mentioned, doing it full out, letting go of the outcome, devoting your action to the divine. So we'll let that unfold as well. There are, as I mentioned, five dharma types, five broad soul blueprints. Now, yours is much more specific than that and individuated to you, but you will have similarities with other people who have the same type of orientation you do. And each of these five roles, each of these five dharma types together, when following their dharma, fulfill the needs and aims of life. The needs and aims of life, according to yoga, are security and sustenance, rightful purpose, enjoyment or pleasure, wisdom, which also includes the desire to evolve or to grow or to better yourself, and freedom, to liberate yourself from your own boxes. And to liberate others, both literally in the world and emotionally, spiritually. And each dharma type's role is to pursue and carry out one of these needs of life, primarily. Now, we all need each of these, right? So we all have aspects of all of the types in our life. But in terms of how we're oriented, what we're called toward or called to do, or the way that we just, the way that we are in the world, each type is oriented, depending on what type we are, we're oriented toward pursuing. And our purpose is to carry out primarily one of these needs of life, not just for ourselves, but for society. So when taken together, then ideally, all of the Dharma types create a fulfilling and prosperous life for all of us. Now, I say ideally. One, you can see here how important, why your Dharma is infinitely important then. Okay? Important to the order of the world and to your own evolution. And it's important to this point in our all of our evolution and the evolution of us as a species and of the universe. And that's why I say ideal, because we're not in an ideal space now, which in some ways, and this is my own offering. In some ways, perhaps our Dharma becomes even more important when we don't live in an ideal world, when we don't live where the values and the contributions of all the Dharma types and all people are valued such that there's an exchange that creates livelihood, creates joy, creates prosperity, or at least sustenance and security for all. So these five Dharma types, you come in with it. I said that. It comes in on your breath with your karma. So don't get afraid of the word karma. Karma is cause and effect. We talked about this in month two. But the thing about karma is it's not bound by our human perception and experience of time and space, okay? And it's not judgmental. So in other words, karma is not a reward or a punishment. It's just a cause and effect. It's just an accumulation of experiences and the need to learn something or change something based on those experiences. And according to my guru, the goal is actually, as you live life after life, the goal is actually to become empty. Okay, so it's not a matter of good karma or bad karma. The goal is to become empty, to have no karma. So this, the nature and function of Dharma itself, right, needs to come in. It's like you come in with the purpose, and that's dictated by what has all come before. And this is why this major import of it, the evolution of the way yoga is setting it out here, really, it's like the evolution not only of your individual self, but the entire world hinges on you choosing your Dharma and following it. That is really the emphasis that they're giving it. I mean, I'm trying to lighten it up a little bit because it could get that serious around it. It's pretty serious here. So I want to say this before I go into the types, because the types use some archetypical language that might be a little triggery, because you might have a type and you're like, oh my God, no, I'm not that. Okay, so I want to say a couple things first before I jump into the types. Krishna has this to say in the Bhagavad Gita. It is better to fail at your own Dharma than to succeed at someone else's. It is better to fail at your own Dharma than to succeed at someone else's. And then the Christian Gnostic, Thomas said it even more potently, okay? He said, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is in you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. And I recently saw that Brené Brown, right, who speaks on vulnerability, on risk, but she recently reflected this truth. Unused creativity is not benign, okay? So we might all know what that feels like, unused creativity. Unused potential, unused creativity is not benign. It has a destructive force when it is held back. And again, I'll just repeat, but I emphasize this because our society, our family, just the world, the times that we live in would direct us. You know, it might, at least it would direct some dharma types not to follow kind of their calling. And this is particularly because, you know, ages of human civilization, cultures, nations have their own dharma types, okay? And they pursue and value that dharma type above the other dharma types. When really, it's not a matter of one being more than or less than the other in terms of what they contribute to society. Okay? But let's finally get to the dharma types. You have a dharma type indicator if you'd had a chance to look at that. I indicated it in the email that I sent out just announcing the month. But it was not linked to that email. It is in the month five materials. It's the first thing listed under the materials. And it is a dharma type indicator that hopefully will tell you your type. If you came up with two, which you may have, that may well indicate that you are one type, okay, just constitutionally, and the secondary type may indicate the phase of life that you're in. So if that has happened, please bring it up on the Facebook forum. Please bring it up in our small call, and we'll talk about what that may mean, and we'll ground it in really what's happening for you right now in your business. As I said, the names of the types may trigger you. And for that reason, I thought about changing them for this program, but they are archetypical, and since we as humans understand archetypes at a level, at a deeper level than really just with our minds, then I didn't want to mess with that and change them. So I figured they've been named. They're based on archetypes. I will honor that. So I encourage you to notice if any of the type names do have a connotation for you. If they bring anything up, positive or negative or anything in between or different, especially with regard to if it's the type you are, okay? So if it's the type you are and that seems to trigger you somehow, acknowledge that, set it aside, and you'll start to settle on in. See if you can ask to settle into a deeper understanding of how you can see this, how this plays out in your life, if it's useful, if it's meaningful to you, okay? And I should say that. I should say that about everything that I offer. I'm offering it because it can be and has been useful as a tool to me and to others, and it's grounded, as I said, in a lineage that I'm in that's been passed down from generation to generation. So, what I offer is potent or powerful and wise in that way. But you should know that, again, this is your dharma. This is your path. And so you can pick and choose. Let's get to the dharma types. If you did, when you have a chance to look at the dharma type indicator, if you have not yet, all I have are the first letters because I didn't want the word triggering you before you took it. The L, which we start with on the left-hand side, is the laborer type. The role of the laborer is to care for others, and specifically to provide security and sustenance. Okay, these laborers are very grounded. They work with their hands sometimes. Sometimes they literally work with the earth. Sometimes they are called to be caregivers through motherhood or fatherhood. They may be called through nursing. There are many different ways that this could take form. They are emotionally intuitive often. I think that you get the point. Their role is to care for others. W is the warrior type. Their role is to protect others. Okay? And it could be literal protection in the sense of military or police. It could also be protection in the sense of fighting for what's right and just. Okay? Warrior types have really their orientation is on justice, something that is rightful and good, and they need to have a purpose. Okay? So they are focused on rightful purpose or defending a just cause. They are often very athletic and very competitive. That's one way of thinking about it, and goal-oriented. Laborers are, you can feel a laborer. They're love. They're like a big grandmother's arms. Okay, if you think about the essence. M is the merchant type, and the role of the merchant is to harness and allocate resources, okay, so that resources are moved around in society. Okay, they move energy, they move resources. These are the people who you're like, whoa, gosh, everyone just gravitates toward them. I don't understand how this person gets so much done. I don't understand how they attract all these people through their marketing. This is they're attractive that way. They move known as Sanskrit terms, they would move Shakti around. They're moving around resources. They move money. They like money. Okay, money is money. Money is good for money's sake because it moves resources. They also related to this. They show people how to have a good time, but it's not just all work. Okay, and they move resources easily so they have time to enjoy themselves. And they're adept at this. They're the people that we look at and go, how do they get so much done? And why are they having such a good time doing it? So they're really here to, again, harness the resources for the common good, allocate resources, move them around, and show people how to enjoy the fruits that come out of this. Okay? The fruits of the sustenance and the security, the fruits of living and pursuing a rightful purpose, how to really enjoy life, get the juiciness out of it. Merchants love that. Next, the educator. The educator's role is to teach and to counsel in order to encourage wisdom. Okay? So you may want to inspire, instill, encourage wisdom of self-evolution. These are the teachers. These are the people who are counseling. These are the people who, when you need sage advice, this is the person you think of. That's probably an educator. The last is the outsider. Okay? And their role is to liberate. The outsider is the mind and the person who creates great, disruptive technologies. The American Revolution, the French Revolution, Gandhi, create huge over overturns of regimes. This is an outsider role, to look from the outside and to assess, to integrate, to move in and out of society so that they understand the inner workings, and they can step back and see what can be changed, what needs to be changed. And that's why they're considered their role to be liberation. So why is this useful to you, even this brief overview? I mean, there's a lot more to them. It's not a box, okay? It's not a destiny. It's an orientation. It's another tool to help you contextualize your path, to help you accept it, to understand it, to use in figuring out what the right next step for you may and could be. A few key things that can make knowing your Dharma type useful. One, it explains a lot, as I just said. Okay, it can contextualize and give a why to the why of your life, okay? And it helps when your path doesn't look like anyone else's to be able to say, oh, wait, there's a reason for that. I can accept it. It gives the mind a little tool. I think that's why I like this idea of a Dharma type so much, is that I have such a, like, weighty mind that wants to know everything. That it gives the mind just that little tool that can say, oh, okay, yeah, I understand this. So if you come then to that place of jealousy where you're looking and you think someone has what you want, this remembering your Dharma type is one more tool to say, oh, that's their path, that's not mine. Let me look to my path. Let me see how I can accept my path. Let me think about what I really want out of this. Two, second thing that's helpful about it is the types broadly have different natural proclivities. I described those briefly. You'll get a sense of that in the type indicator. It goes through different specific statements. So you're going to get a real general, you're going to get a more specific sense of what each type looks like, feels like, acts like, and recognize yourself in it. And again, one is not lesser or greater than the other. All Dharma types are equal in the value of the role that they play. Third key it could offer is the types have different relationships with money. Okay, this isn't talked about a lot. We talked about it a little bit with Nona. Does money work the same way for everyone? No. There is right now, at this point in time, at least in the online world that I inhabit, and I know some of you inhabit, a lot of talk about money and abundance and energetically fitting money and your relationship with money and abundance into the whole universe, calling to the universe. Wealth consciousness is sometimes called. And so having this knowledge that not all of the types relate to money in the same way, nor does money have the same role in their Dharma, is really important in this context. Okay, it's really important in working in your own business. It's really important when comparing yourself to others. Because we, especially in the U.S. is a merchant country. We live in a merchant era of human civilization. Okay, and for the most part, from what I can deduce, the merchant types are teaching others what works for them. So this is a merchant exchange. Of the energetic dynamic of money for merchants, from merchants, which is not bad in a merchant society. All of us need to kind of have a sense and understand that. But if you're not a merchant type, trying to push to be in that space or live in that way is probably going to cause frustration or pain. Just putting that out there. So it's important for most of the types, all the four other types, to just modulate that information, learn from merchants, certainly, but run it through your own knowledge of your own type for deeper understanding about how money as a form of exchange and as a form of energy works for you. And we can talk about this more. I feel now that I'm talking about it a little bit that I'm feeling the need to expound upon it more than I have time to do today. So I'm going to carve out some space to do a little writing or maybe a little talking more about this. But just know that merchants move money around. That is their purpose. That's what they do in society. On the other end of the spectrum, outsiders and educators in particular, they don't move money around. Okay, much, much harder for them. Okay, so if you're frustrated, again, look to your type. It's not an excuse, but it is a bit of a, let me focus on my purpose. And it's not to say that money won't come into outsiders and educators, but it may give you an understanding of the path that you have been on. If it feels like in relationship to money or business building, your path has been longer or more up and down or has required more surrender from you than you may see in your colleagues. Just an offering. And the fourth thing is that the Dharma type can but doesn't have to dictate your vocation. So there are some vocations that are more suited or more some Dharma types feel more called or more suited to other, to certain vocations. I mean, you know, lawyer comes to mind for warrior, doctor, nurse comes to mind for caregiver, craftsman comes to mind for, for laborer, craftsman comes to mind for laborer. But know that any type can do any type of work, okay? So the type doesn't dictate your vocation. The way you do your work will be different according to your type. So you will approach your work differently than another type will if you're in the same line of work or in the same vocation. So again, I feel like this needs some more massaging, some more teasing out, but I think the best way for us to do that is to understand from you what each of your Dharma types are and start to work with concrete pieces that are in your business. So I'm going to stop there. That is not all. I'm going to leave you wanting more this month. We've gone through the conceptual bit. You have the type indicator. Please go ahead and do that if you haven't already. There's a lot of information about each type, and I'm very interested to hear what you find out and how that sits with you. We're going to have some more experiential practice on going from deep wisdom to concrete action with Lisa Berkovich. And we're going to get even more concrete with defining gift and your kind of unique set of idiosyncrasies and traits and training. We're going to do that with the gift chart. So we'll continue to tease this out. Please, I hope you don't feel left or abandoned. We'll work with this all month. The meditation that we did at the beginning is your meditation for the month. There is a separate audio recording, doing that meditation, repeating the cycle through the chakras 5 times. That's in the meditation, that's in the member center. So we will be doing that, and we will be doing a Krishna mantra. Okay, and the mantra is Om Shri Krishnaya Namaha. Om Shri Krishnaya Namaha. And there is a recording with explanation, with pronunciation practice and with 108 repetitions in the members area, only because I am heading back into my own training, and I feel like that's very important, not just for me, but for this work that we're doing together. I'm not going to run you through it today, but it is there in the members, and I will take you through it in our daily practice beginning on Monday. So thank you. Thank you for being here. I'm going to leave you with that. If you have any questions, please write them down, post them on the forum. I will be available to answer those going forward. And if you'd like to get together in a separate, say, half-hour session and ask them live, we can also set up to do that. So I leave you with that. Thank you very, very much. Namaste.